Okay, so we're holding the fourth parak. The fourth parak deals with the topic of androgynous. Okay, androgynous, even in English, the word is androgynous, right? Or hermaphrodite, it's the same. Hermaphrodite, which is the same thing as androgynous. The word androgynous in... it's called androgynous, the same thing in English and in the Gemara. It's a Greek word from the word andro. Andro is... You guys are screaming, right? Oh, I see. Okay, good. So, andro means like male, like android or androgen. And gyno is like a female, like gynecologist. So, androgynous and androgynous is a male-female combined. Hermaphrodite is the term more commonly used in English, was one of them, but it's... The Chazal avoided it, and like the rabbis avoided it, because it comes from Greek mythology. The term Hermes, like that's Mercury in Roman mythology, and Aphrodite, that's like Venus, and so they had a child, which was this both thing. So in the story in the Greek mythology, but I think the rabbis avoided it because of its Avodah Zarah overtones. You can see, not that I recommend going to see it, but you can see in this person. The child, which was called whatever it's called, hermaphroditus, I think it was something like that. So this child actually features in Greek mythology, and there's actually a frightening, in my view, sculpture of this person in the Louvre. It's basically a boy girl. Like it's the thing has breasts and like male parts. It's strange. In any case, so that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about someone who's got both parts.
There's also a genetic.
I'm gonna discuss everything now. So, okay, let's give you a bit of the scientific background here. What goes on? What makes someone into a boy or a girl, or man or woman for that matter, is there's really three kind of factors that go into it. I'm not talking halakhically. I'm just talking like now, generically, scientifically, and sort of how people look. First of all, you have the genetic background. Men, there's one of the chromosomes. If a person gets two X's, then they're a girl, and if they get an X and a Y, they're a boy. So it's on the Y chromosome, the lower leg of the Y chromosome is what determines like your maleness. And if you have that chromosome, the Y chromosome, so then your body will, when a fetus, like an embryo, when it starts out, so it's like, it could be both, it can go both ways. Based on if it's got an X or an XY or an XX, then genes will tell it to make either one of two what they call primary sex organs. Either will be a vestigial testicles, or it'll be like ovaries. Those are called the primary sex organs because they are the ones that put out the hormones. Okay, fine. Now that happens, by the way, like about 40 days, 5 or 6 weeks. That's scientifically speaking, and that's I guess the basis on the Chazal also. Okay, then once you have either one of those two parts, so then those things produce hormones. So if you have ovaries, they'll put out girly hormones, and if you have testicles, they put out boy hormones. And that will tell the body to develop into a boy or into a girl, and so on. And then later on in life, assuming that everything worked out okay, then, a person hits puberty, then they have, like, secondary, sexual characteristics, like hair and the deep voice and all that kind of stuff, like a man or like a girl. And also, all the other parts that we're used to, just the external parts, sexual organs, they're all called secondary because they only come because of the hormones put out by the testicles in utero. So... Well, all that means, bottom line is, if God forbid a person has like some sort of hormonal problem or has a genetic problem, so then they can come out ambiguous. They can come out either not clear what they are or both. Like the same piece, the same like piece of the body, let's call it, in the embryo early on, like at 6 weeks, either turns like the same place thing, either like molds into like a girly part or into a boy part. So like if something goes wrong on the way, then it can be like a little of both or half or literally both. Okay, so that's the situation. Now, it seems that androgynous is someone who's a true hermaphrodite, meaning someone who actually has both parts. It's a pretty rare condition. There's about 400 cases in the medical literature altogether, so it's pretty darn uncommon to be bona fide two things. But there's certainly lots of what they call pseudo-hermaphroditism, which means that you're really a boy or a girl, meaning that you either, I'm not talking halakhically yet, I'm talking medically, and you either have XX or XY, there's no like mosaic business, it's like you are one or the other, and you even only have one or the other, either ovaries or testicles, but something went wrong after that. Oops. Thank you. And then you, but something goes wrong hormonally thereafter. So it's really, medically you're for sure a girl or a boy, because you have XX and you have, and no Ys in you, and you have, say, only ovaries, but then something hormonally goes wrong, which makes your body start producing, treating you like a man. The hormones kick in, and so you start, you know, developing man parts and man traits, but really you're a girl.
It can happen vice versa also.
And it can have vice versa, exactly. Same if you can be a man, you can be XY and just have testicles, but they cannot. Oftentimes, they just something went wrong with them. And they're not producing the proper hormones, so that you become like female. You become girlish, but you're really, of course, male. I'm just saying that's how it all works. So I'm saying, so do you actually have both male and female parts? That's very uncommon, but to be like ambiguous because you have hormonal issues is not that uncommon, unfortunately. It's not really clear. The Gemara seems explicit, huh?
Is there any way to explain that? I mean, in the secular world out there, a lot of people want to be something else and have...
Well, it's a more complex phenomenon.
Is there any scientific, like, hormonal thing that they could... Whatever, it's wrong, could they claim, hey...
You're talking about people wanting to be transgender or people being homosexual?
Oh,
they're all like multifaceted issues. There's some genetic, there's some hormonal, there's some environmental, there's some psychological, some package. You know, it's clearly complex. Like most of these phenomena in people, even things like anorexia and so on, like which are like, it's usually genetic sort of loads the gun and then environment pulls the trigger. That's kind of usually how it works. So there is certainly genetic.
No, there has to be a problem before.
The stack is decked.
Problems don't have the problem.
Right, right. Oh, thank you very much. Okay, thank you. Let me move forward then. That's right. So, usually there's something that, you know, they have. But anyways, that's beyond. That's not our topic now. Point is, over here, the Gemara seems to define an androgynous as someone who has both parts, which we call it in true androgynous, really rare, but I mean, I don't know, like, you know, there's a lot of like gray area in between where things kind of look like could be both, you're not sure exactly, you know, that people don't develop properly. The Gemara actually doesn't ever describe what an androgynous looks like. It just, the only case, really, a precedent, if you will, it talks about is that Admarishan was this hermaphroditic thing of both male and female in the beginning. But like, we don't have descriptions of it later on. Okay? So, we don't know exactly. But now, in terms of halacha, Tzitz Eliezer, that's like a 20th century post, like, says we don't care about like chromosomal analysis. We don't care if they're XX or XY. What we care about is what they're on the outside. So, it won't help you.
Who's the
I don't know, actually. I don't know. He lived just here in Yerushalayim. I don't know. He's a really, real. The halacha is to go on the outside, but we don't care about, because sometimes, like I told you, someone, if it's a hormonal issue, then genetically, so you're an XX. I don't care what you know, what that your voice is. You know, that doesn't matter. You have hair, you have a beard, but you're still. Although the Gemara says it describes it having, this defines it as someone having both male and female parts. Like, you know, I'm not sure exactly if, I'm not confident that it doesn't exist. People have all these ambiguous, you know, male and female, this is about them. Can't say. Now, halacha lemaisa, Chazal did not know what to do with these people. They just didn't know. Why am I saying that? Because there's like 7 shitas on what the halacha status is of an androgynous.
7
shitas. I don't know, I made that up. There's a lot. The reason why it's hard to even define how many there are, you'll see why. First of all, some say that it's that androgynous is really a male, and some say really it's its own species all to itself, and some say why we get on the topic is because the koi. You'll see it's the exact same structure as the koi mishnah. Just the same way koi is half bema, half, like, you know, behema and chaya. So too, we'll say an androgynous is like a boy and a girl. That's exactly the same structure. That's why it's appended here. Some say that it's a suffix. We don't know if it's a boy or girl. Some say it's half of each. Some say it's a suffix if it's, we don't know if it's a boy or girl, or if it's like that. That's it. I don't know how many there are. Because some learn that it's a suffix, that some in the Gemara learn it's a suffix if it's a boy or girl, and some learn it's a suffix whether it's a suffix that it's a boy or girl, or if it's or if it's, you understand? Like it's. Anyways, so there's the.
Is there any difference between an Rebbeinu and a Mephita?
Same word, same thing.
Same thing.
Same exact thing. Usually, androgynous is often referred. Well, the same thing. There is hermaphroditic can also be referring to in animals like earthworms and stuff, but I'm talking about in humans. I'm not talking about. Okay. Now, halacha lemaisa, not on Mishnah, but halacha lemaisa. The Rishonim didn't really know what to do with it either. Most that's like the Rif, the Rambam, the Tur, the Shulchan Aruch, the Gra, so that will be the Kaveya. Learn that it's a suffix, that such a person is a masupik if they're a man or a woman. And our Mishnayos go like that. Our Mishnayos go according to that Tana, that we're treating them basically, we're being machmir both ways, just like the Koi, we're being machmir both ways. The Rosh and the Ri actually both learn that it's a man, it's a halachic man. And the Riva learns it's half and half. So, but and the Ramah brings the Rosh as a Yesh Omer, that it's a man. So, anyways, this is obviously a very unfortunate situation. But that's what we're talking about over here. Let me see, I wrote some notes. I want to make sure I said what I wanted to say. Yeah. Okay. So that's the background on the actual creature, or whatever. I don't know what to call it. I don't know what to call it. Syndrome, but such a human being like that. These Mishnayos, like I told you, are probably Tosefta. That's how most say. There's almost none of the usual suspects, like who we always quote every day, have even a parish on the Mishnayos. The only one is the Rush. Everyone else left it. There's no Bartanur, there's no Rambam, and so on this, because they learned Tosefta. There are also four Girsos. That's brought down in the Yochanan and Boaz, but I'm going to be using the art scroll one. Why I'm picking the art scroll? They usually are pretty beiskeches on which girsa they choose. So I'm going with their girsa. You'll see. Some have four mishnayos, some have five mishnayos. This one has five. Whatever. We'll go through this one. It's fine. Fine. Sorry. Say again.
So
the Gemara says it's an androgynous one who has both male and female parts to him. But I'm sort of that's what it says. I'm just kind of questioning. I'd wonder whether like Chazal actually started looking at people so carefully if they kind of look like both men and women. I wonder if they wouldn't fall into this category anyways. It's like a gray area. So in other words, usually what happens is in true hermaphrodites is that they're usually raised as men. Because they externally like they have something, so they think they're a boy. But then, oftentimes, they just become they're treated as girls. Truth is that true hermaphrodites are actually they although they have both, there are cases of them getting pregnant as females, but they're usually sterile. They usually are not males. Can't do it. Okay. So now.
So there's 400 cases in all medical documentation, or today?
According to like. Avram, like they know that the medical dictionary.
It's very rare.
It's rare. 400 cases. I mean, whatever. If somebody's born like that,
throughout medical history.
Yeah, in medical literature. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many people in Ghana end up in the medical books. You know what I'm saying? Whatever happens to them happens to them. But I'm saying the point is, you could take that as indication. It's highly uncommon, right? It's not a common phenomenon. To be a true hermaphrodite. But I'm telling you, we said like all this Klinefelter and so on. There are lots of genetic things which make people mosaic that make people like ambiguous. They kind of. Could also be genetic issue. Yeah. Okay. So now here we go. So Mishnah Aleph. So now we'll see him inside. That's all the background. Now we'll see this. It'll be a tour of Shas again. Obviously, the Nachmina is men and women have different halachic statuses across the board. So now, basically, we're going to say this Tana learns that we are afraid they're a man and we're afraid they're a woman. Therefore, mock them both ways, like the koi. So this is Tanya, which indicates Tana Brisa. Androgynous, if you have an androgynous, yeshbo drachim shavel anashim, there are ways in which they are comparable to males, yeshbo drachim shavel anashim, and sometimes they're in some ways they're the halacha status like females. V'yesh b'drachem shava l'nashim v'l'nashim, sometimes they're the same as men and women. V'yesh b'drachem she'eno shava lo l'nashim v'lo l'nashim, some halachas, their halachas neither like a man nor like a woman, all because of, we're going l'chumra across the board. Here they are. So first of all, shava l'nashim ketzad. How is an androgynous like a halachli like a man? First of all, metalim beloven. If he has a white emission, so that was like ostensibly a zav emission, like the Gemara describes a zav as like the color of like a egg, unfertilized egg white. But so that, if a woman would have such an emission, that wouldn't be metamah her. But if a man has such an emission, it does. And this, if an androgynous has such an emission, so it's metamim ka anashim. Second, we're talking about zav, ostensibly not shechva zera, according to most. Venose aval lo nisa. Okay, so this means they can. No, there's a million girsahs. We'll go with this girsa. There's lots of girsahs because they're not. Yeah, we'll get to that. Just a different order. The girsahs aren't really radically different, by the way, in terms of content. There's like a few like verbs flipped around and some ordering flipped around, but it's more the same content. So it says venosa velol nisa. So which means they can marry, but they can't get married. The man is the marrier in the transaction of marriage. So it means that an androgynous can marry another as if he were a man, because we're like the man-like, but not get married like a female. Now, this Tana learns that it's a suffix man or woman, therefore be machner both ways, and therefore like, and that's the Rambam Paskin. So for example, if such a person gets married, he'll need to give a get. He can't stick around married. But in the meantime, if he does get married, so will be makel. This is the application of this particular keta here, this line in the Mishnah. If the androgynous is a Kohen and he marries a girl who's not a Kohen, so until he divorces her, she can eat truma. That's the extent of the applicability of this halacha. Okay? But that's the point here. No, we'll see everything. No, he's not doing anything. We're just saying, now they got married. Now what? Now can she eat truma or not? And if she does, is she a chai? The answer is she's permitted to eat truma. That's the full extent of that line there. Okay, fine. Like men. Ve'enum is yachadim hanashim, since we're in this Tana, we're afraid that the person may be or suffic if he's a man, and since a man is also to be misyachad with a woman, so he can't be with a woman by himself. Ka'anashim, like men. Ve'enum nizon im habanos. However, he's not, I don't know, supported like the daughters. The story is when if a person dies and he leaves over an estate and he leaves over children, so if there's not enough money in the estate, first and foremost, the money in the estate goes to support the daughters, the young daughters, until they get married off. So knows if there's limited supplies, they get priority care, if you will, in terms of allocation of the money. So the androgynous doesn't get that privilege, even though he's sort of half girl, or whatever you call it, Suffolk girl, but he can't, at the expense of other girls, take from the estate like that. He's like a boy, in other words, like the boys don't get it. Ve'eno ne'ataf. Ne'ataf means wrap. Like, can't dress like a girl, in short. Can't dress like a girl, right? U'misafer ka'anashim, he gets a haircut like a man. The reason why is, Chazal were more, you see, first of all, that from the previous line about marrying and not getting married, Chazal were much more, if they had to choose, but here they have to choose, how should he dress? So they much prefer him to look, to act like a man, act like a woman, because on the tzad that he's a man, we don't have to attract a wife. So we don't have to attract a husband by dressing like a girl, because for a man to marry a man is a chiyuv d'oraisa, right? That's chorus, bad news. But for a man to marry a woman, for a woman to marry a woman, that's bepashtus only like a, what's called like a maisa of Mitzrayim. It's like, you know, the nasty stuff the Egyptians did. But
be married, be lived with.
Yeah, I mean, married, you know. Yeah, no, I mean, you know what I mean. So that that's not Chayav Misa. Yes, it's not even, it's Bapashas, even Isser from the Torah. Bapashas. If it is, it's like Isser from the Torah, like Baal Teshachzu, you know, it's a gross thing to do. It's like acting like they did in Egypt, but it's not an explicit love. So if they had to choose, you know, to attract somebody, let them rather attract a woman by dressing like a man than attract like a man by dressing like a woman, and Michayev Mis and so on. And we also do that thing. So they dress like a man. Ve'enu matama lemesim, they can't become tame tameis. When a kohen, as you probably know, is restricted from going into the becoming tame for no good reason. A kohen can't become tame. That only applies to male kohanim. Female kohanim are restricted like that. So this person, we're not sure if he's a male or female, but we're treating him like a male. And if he's a kohen, a child of a kohen, he's not allowed to become tame. That's what the raya says. So he can't stay out of the basic form. V'chayev b'val takif u'bal tashches. He is obligated that. If you remember, I told you that there are eight mitzvahs that are mitzvahs asish as mangrama that are applicable only to men but not to women. Remember the discussion we had? I don't know if I also appended there are actually six other mitzvahs which don't apply to women at all, but not because of zman grama, not because of time constraints, but because they're women. So one of them is Talmud Torah, that's the most notable. But two other ones that are, we just learned about the Kohana business, so now two other ones are shaving your payas and your beard. Okay, those of course don't apply to a woman. I don't know, of course, but they don't apply to a woman. And but we are going to be treating it, being strict for an androgynous. Let me just give me 1 minute to explain this halachas out, because I don't think people necessarily understand them. They're two unrelated, they're two independent lavam. The lav of cutting your payas, what's called bal takif. Takif is like, I don't know, it's a round off. So the issue is there, you have to leave hair over here. Where is over here? Somewhere between like your temple, I can't, it's not a mirror, it's hard for me to see what I'm looking at. Temple and your ear and like the line across, I can't, it's hard for me to see. This area, you know where they are, over here somewhere. The truth is, we don't have exact masor of where exactly it is. And it goes down to the big machma, down to the jawbone. Okay, so this area over here, it's considered your payas. You're not allowed to shave it clean, but it's not an issue of a knife or a blade on your face, it's an issue of not having enough hair there. And therefore, you have to have enough, it has to be long enough that you could fold over like the hair on itself. Which means, which means like definitely not less than number two, right? Two is I don't know here in America, 2 means 2/8 of an inch. I don't know if they do that here. They might have said, but in America, definitely not less than 2/8 of an inch. The 1/4 inch is very, very short.
As long as you could pull it.
Correct.
I didn't want to pull one.
Well, some say you have to be able to. The rabbi learns you have to be able to fold it on itself. So you want to be, this is a doraisa here, so you want to be mafkin here. You also want to be careful, something that people do not realize very much, this is like a funny thing, you're dealing with the doraisa, I don't know why people like, when the barber cleans your hair, usually he does, he takes off the guard, he does a 2 or 3 over here, then he takes off the guard and he shapes around here. That means he's keeping a shape over here. That's bad news, to be careful with that. I don't know why no barbers know that, because really the barbers are flawed by doing it, you are too, by helping him. But you can't cut that short, like really short. And like, people do it. I don't know why they do. You shouldn't let them do that behind your ear. That's what I say. I don't ask my own rabbi. I say you should not let them do it behind your ear.
Behind your ear.
Like here. It's hard for them to do. Right here.
In the payas area.
The payas. Yeah, the payas. This is your payas for sure. And they're gonna make it smooth, a smooth hairline. But they're chopping hairs off there. So you're cutting those payas off.
Yeah, they're short there.
I don't think you should. I don't think you shouldn't let him take off the guard and shape it. Sorry? Well, I'm talking about here. This part of here I'm talking about. You know, it's not really behind my ear, but it's like, you know, it's here. You can see it. This part over here is part of your pits. What they do is they smooth it out, like they make it look nice. So no hair should like touch over your ear? I'm saying you shouldn't do that, yeah. The person who cuts it is over the law, but if you help him, which you are helping him and telling him to do it, you're also over. Yeah.
And they usually use the penalty wax to remove it.
Right.
So now you say they shouldn't do that.
Forget hermaphrodites and everything else. That's a good point. There's such depilatory wax, you know, we call it like nair, they call it in America and stuff, you know, like they when you used to remove. I don't care what you're using to cut your hair, you can't remove your payas. Even if you're using wax or if you're using depilatory or whatever. You can't, it has to be hair here. Hair long enough to grab.
Even for a woman?
No, only for men. Only for men. That's for your payas. That's for your payas. You can't cut them too short. Then there's a separate issue about. So that's the first one we had. Was it the first one? Yeah, bal takif. Then you have bal tashchis. Hashchasa is like, I don't know, it's like to destroy, I don't know. Bal tashchis, it's referring to, though, putting a blade to your face, a razor blade to your face. So that you're not allowed to do. Of course, make a smooth shave. So that's a separate law from the Torah, and it's not it's but putting the knife to your face. If it's a scissor action, it's permissible, which is why, well, in America anyways, people use electric razors, obviously, and the way that the reason why it's mutter is there's essentially a guard, you know? Like, a knife is like a blade against your face. A scissor is a blade against a blade, right? So when you have an electric razor, what happens is, I need another hand here. This hair is coming out here, so I'm going to magnify it 1,000 times. So a guard, what you call it, like a foil comes, or whatever it is, you know? So the hairs, these are the hairs here. And then what happens is, the blades are circling, they're usually circling. They're cutting here, so they're cutting against the other side of metal, and you're not, your face is protected over here. Now,
the lifting cut.
Yeah. So now, I'm not really up on this, okay? But I think the Poskim and Eretz Yisrael don't like any electric razors, Bekitzer. Long story short. So you have to, electric razors, you have to ask your rabbi what to do exactly, okay? I'm just giving you the principles. The issue is, what do they use? I guess they use depilatory cell.
I guess. Today.
Yeah, cream. I don't think. Yeah. I've had a beard since I'm 17. I don't really know, but I'm just not on the ball with what they do practically. In America, they allow electric razors. The problem is some of the razors, the way they're designed to, like, lift and cut is your classic. They're designed to pull the hairs deeper into the cutter, that you get a closer shave. Close the shave, your money back. Close the blade, your money back. But the problem is, what they're doing, they're pulling the hairs, which means that they're pulling your follicle and your skin into the blade. So now, it doesn't really hurt you, but the point is, you've now got a blade cutting against your skin proper. That's a problem. So the question is which mechanisms do that, which don't do that. So in America, they say only lift and cuts do, and you can take your neuralgicals in, and they'll adjust the blade for you. But something like the Braun, if you know, like the Braun one, I think, is totally usser. It's a different sit with a foil. The point is, there is a list floating around of which you can use. Not all electric shavers are okay. They should be putting a blade to your face. So I'm giving that hakdama because those are very lumaisa for us today. So since this person in androgynous is maybe a man, so he can't go and cut off his payas or put a blade to his face, even if he wants to. V'chayv v'chol mitzvos hamurus b'torah k'nashim. And an androgynous is obligated in all mitzvahs in the Torah like men. They have their machmir. We don't get them off like women. We treat them like men. They're machmir across the board. Okay, so now the last three mishnayos, I guess we'll everyone's invited to come tonight at the Merzels. Oh, sorry. Yeah, tomorrow night. Yeah, sorry, Thursday. Right. The Merzels tomorrow night. And also maybe we'll have plenty of time. We'll do Chazara tomorrow. Maybe we'll do it in the Chazara. We can do it in the Chazara. So you have your options. You can do it the night seder. Not everyone makes it.
What about a tumtum?
A tumtum isn't mentioned in this parak here, but a tumtum. It's a good question. A tumtum is a person that has like a membrane that covers over their genitalia, so you can't see if they're a man or a woman. So we're machmir for them also as both.
Yeah, it's 9 over 2
I
alone.
9 over 2 alone. Good morning.
You have a bach down to 8:45.
This.
Tomorrow downstairs?
Downstairs, Chazara, yeah, sure. So, a tumtum is a very, very rare phenomenon. Very rare phenomenon. Very. Yeah, much more rare. There's like one recorded case of a tumtum, like in modern times. Tumtum is very uncommon. But the Gemara does ever talk about a tumtum. The Gemara says there was, and the Gemara Yevamos says there was a tumtum floating around, and they basically cut open the flap. Not a big deal today. Yeah, exactly. And then they reveal if it's a man or a woman. And the Gemara says this tumtum had children, had 9 children, I think. The Gemara says seven children, whatever. 7, I think, or 9. It was a male. Yeah, that's only difference. Whatever. No, tumtum is totally. Tumtum means like blocked off. Like, you know, a tum means you don't know. There's like a hole there. There's like a hole that it leaks out of.
That's gotta be very dangerous for infection.
I don't know. Yeah, sure, it's not great. But it's very uncommon. Very uncommon.
Dr. Shaul Barros, have you heard of him? He's